Royal Drayton.
Good morning. Thomas Cumro appearing on behalf of Mr. Drayton, and I'd like to use reserve three minutes for rebuttal.
All right. You may proceed.
Interesting posture of this case. The issue this morning is whether the trial court abused its discretion in admitting the 9mm ammunition that was found in the house that Mr. Drayton was alleged to have been involved with.
And that's raised in the supplemental.
It's raised in the supplemental. The statement of additional grounds, yes, he raised that. He raised it under three theories here, that it wasn't relevant, that it was a prior act under 404B, and that it was more prejudicial than probative. And the relevance aspect goes to the fact that our victim here was shot, and there was no question about that, but they were unable to remove the bullet, and the bullet was deformed. So they were unable to determine the caliber of the bullet in his body. There were no shell casings found at the scene. There was no gun ever found. All that was ever admitted here was the 9mm ammo. Now, we do have a statement that was admitted as part of Mr. Martinez's identification of Mr. Drayton, that he had seen Mr. Drayton with a gun, maybe a 9mm. From Mr. Drayton's standpoint...
So I want to ask you about that. So that was admitted for substantive evidence.
I went over that...
For a limited purpose.
I went over that two or three times just to make sure, because one of the issues I raised was the whole aspect of Mr. Martinez's testimony. Yes, it was admitted for the limited purpose of the identification of Mr. Drayton. So what we have is no gun, no bullet, no shell casings. All we have is 9mm ammunition. So from that standpoint, it's simply not relevant.
Can you address how it was prejudicial?
Why
it wasn't harmless?
Let's say, and this is the interesting aspect, we don't know what the bullet was that entered the victim's body, if it was a 22. If it was a 22, this is completely irrelevant. A 9mm, it's got nothing to do with the shooting. The simple fact that we don't know is a critical point. It could be a 22, it could be a 10mm, it could be anything. But we focus now on the 9mm, and the state's theory at trial was that he's guilty of unlawful possession of a firearm if you find that he shot the person. So therefore, the possession is the gun that he used to shoot the person. That's the critical aspect. Now, all of a sudden, we've jumped to the conclusion that it was a 9mm simply because we found 9mm ammunition in his house. And that's not necessarily the case. So from that standpoint, it's simply not relevant. Assuming it is relevant, it's a prior act under 404B. And nobody, the state never proffered a reason for under 404B for its admission. The court never found one. So we haven't...
There was no specific objection to not doing a 404B.
No, there was no specific objection to that, but in the defense trial brief, it was raised as relevancy and 404B prior act. But at the time the court made the ruling, yes, there was no specific objection to that. And it was also raised...
Well, if it came in... Martinez thought Drayton had that kind of a gun and then he has that kind of ammunition. Why isn't that relevant to help connect him to the crime? Wasn't there kind of an issue as to who it was that did the shooting?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was the critical thing here. It was Martinez was the one who identified our client, Mr. Drayton, as the shooter. The statement of identification of Mr. Drayton was relevant as to the identification of Mr. Drayton as the shooter, not as to the quality of the gun or the size of the gun, because remember, that's limited to the identification of Mr. Drayton. So once again, if you take that 9mm aspect out, we're stuck here with ammunition, 9-millimeter ammunition.
Well, are you saying that the testimony of Martinez then should have been truncated so that he didn't mention the gun, kind of gun that he thought Martinez had?
Yes. The only reason it came in is because it was part and parcel of his statement identifying our client, his convoluted way of identifying our client, his initial statements to the police, his subsequent recalcitrant behavior, and then his testimony at trial, and the whole issue that we raised of impeachment versus substantive versus the whole confusing aspect to the jury.
I guess I don't see why it wouldn't come in, because it sort of it ties up the identification. I mean, if Martinez had said, yes, Mr. Drayton, I saw this person, and he had very distinctive dark hair, and then dark hair was found in the, you know, in the car. I mean,
there's the critical aspect of dark hair was found in the car. The gun was never found.
No,
I mean, that's the critical aspect here. And once again, we're assuming, we're making that connection that...
Well, would you agree with the proposition that someone, proving that someone had 9-millimeter ammunition in their house makes it more likely than not that they possessed a weapon that would accept 9-millimeter ammunition?
Depends upon where we are on the scale here. Mere relevance or the lowest standard of logic, possibly.
They searched the house 2 days after the shooting?
I think it was two
That's
days.
That's fairly close in time, isn't it?
True, but...
Searched two houses. One has no ammunition. I'm looking for a guy with a 9-millimeter gun. I searched two houses. House has no ammunition. The other has 9-millimeter ammunition.
And remember, Mr. Drayton was not the only person in that house. His girlfriend was there, and they had children there. Now, it's unlikely the children are armed with a 9-millimeter. But we don't know who else had access to the house. We're assuming that Mr. Drayton had access to that 9-millimeter ammunition, and that was his.
Possible explanations for evidence doesn't make it no longer relevant.
No, it may make it relevant, but now we have to jump to assuming that it's relevant. We've got the 404B aspect that it's now a prior act, and we don't have any analysis under 404B about why exactly this is coming in. And I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. It's Dennis McCurdy for the State of Washington, the respondent in this case. I will address the same issue as defense counsel, since this court called the parties and said that this was an issue they wanted to hear about. I would ask the court to find that the trial court did not abuse its discretion in admitting the partially empty box of 9-millimeter ammunition found less than 72 hours after the defendant was alleged to have shot the victim in downtown Seattle. It is an abuse of discretion standard. The defendant would have to prove that no reasonable judge would have allowed this evidence into, or this ammunition into evidence. Now, because this wasn't briefed, I had to speculate a little bit about the court's concern, and I would cite to a couple cases about firearm evidence. State v. Roop, 101, Washington 2nd, 664, and State v. Freeburg, 105, Washington Appellate 492. In those cases, the court did express concerns about gun evidence being introduced at trials for a variety of reasons. One, there is a Second Amendment right to possess a firearm, and the court was concerned about drawing adverse inferences from the exercise of a constitutional right, and also just the potential prejudice that firearm evidence has.
Mr. Drayton had that Second Amendment right?
He did not, and that was one of the things I wanted to point out. Mr. Drayton had been convicted of rob 2, assault 2, taking a motor vehicle without permission, and assault 4, domestic violence. All of those convictions prohibited him from possessing a firearm, as well as
ammunition.
I'm sorry, what?
How about from possessing ammunition?
It did not. I looked at the statute the other day just because I couldn't recall whether it did or not. I believe the federal statute prohibits the possession of ammunition. I believe the state statute does not. But his mere possession of a firearm is, in fact, illegal. And you don't have the situations that you had in Roop and in Freeburg. Now, in Roop, It was a death penalty case. The defendant had shot and killed two bank tellers. In the penalty phase, the state introduced the fact that Roop had an arsenal of guns, including military assault weapons. And then the state argued that that showed what type of person Roop is. In Freeburg, the defendant shot the victim in 1994, and 3 years later he was caught in Canada in possession of a .45 caliber handgun. As in Roop, the weapons they're talking about were not connected to the crime. The .45 caliber that Freeburg had was not used in the murder. The weapons that Roop had in his home were not used in the murders. In Freeburg, the prosecutor argued that the possession of the gun was equivalent to flight evidence, that it showed a consciousness of guilt. The rule that the court articulated in those cases was the fact of lawful possession of a firearm cannot be used to draw an adverse inference of guilt. But that's not what was done here. First of all, the defendant did not have a constitutional right to possess a firearm. But in this case, the evidence was directly relevant. We weren't bringing an adverse inference from his possession of the bullets. We were showing that it was relevant because less than 72 hours, he's alleged to have used a 9mm to shoot the victim. And what's he have in his house? 9mm ammunition. Why do you have ammunition if you don't have a gun? That's certainly relevant. Why are bullets missing from the box? Because they would be in the gun. Now, we don't have the gun, and we don't have the bullet. But that doesn't mean it's not relevant. All it has to do to be relevant is it has to make the existence of any fact that is a consequence to the termination of the action more or less probable.
Does its relevance depend upon the fact that the trial court admitted Martinez's statement saying he thought he had a gun, that kind of a gun?
That is a factor. I don't think that's dispositive because I think you could set up different situations. Let's say we knew the caliber of the bullet, and it was a 22 that was used to kill the victim, and you've got 9mm ammunition in his house. Certainly, I think in that case, it's not admissible. In this case, we do have evidence that the ammunition and the gun used were the same caliber. But if you did not have any information about the caliber, I think it's still probative. Because the defense can argue, no, it might have been a different gun. We don't know that. That would go to the weight, not the admissibility of the evidence. The same inference still applies. You've got ammunition in the defendant's residence, which indicates he possessed a gun. You've got ammunition that's missing from that box, which is an indication it was in the gun the defendant used. That's relevant. The fact that, you know, the added fact that we have specific substantive evidence that it was the same caliber used is just a factor. Now, a different judge might rule differently if we didn't have that evidence. But it's an abuse of discretion standard. If another judge ruled it wasn't admissible because we didn't know the caliber used to shoot the victim, and the state were up here arguing, we'd probably lose, again, because it's abuse of discretion standard.
Well, it must have been pretty important evidence. I mean, in other words, you don't have a gun, you don't have a bullet, you've got this kind of shaky witness who is the person that says that Drayton shot the victim. You don't even have the victim testifying. So,
correct.
I mean, the argument from the defense has to be, well, you know, somebody else did it. I mean, how do we know it's Martinez? I mean, you know, what's the case if you don't have that gun evidence?
Oh, I think we have a substantial case. We've got, first of all, we've got the defendant making a statement that we could easily prove that was a complete lie. He said he was home in bed at the time of the shooting. We've got, you know, ignore the cell phone records that the defense talked. We have him on the phone talking to 911 from the scene of the shooting saying, hey, my cousin stole my car. So, you know,
you don't have him saying, I'm going to shoot him as soon as I track him down.
No, you don't. But what you have after that is less than 6 minutes later, you have Martinez calling 911 saying, my cousin's just been shot. You've got the one car they're arguing about. You've got the other car at the same residence that the defendant's at with the window that he's had replaced with glass shards inside. broken window at the scene of the crime. You've got, there's a plethora of evidence that connects the defendant to this shooting, and nobody else. Again, the defense wants to say, well, there could be other people living in the house, and in fact, there was the girlfriend. Again, it goes to the weight of the evidence, not the admissibility. And there's no evidence that the girlfriend was at the crime scene. She wasn't on the phone calling 911 saying, my car's here, it's been stolen, my cousin's at my car right now, and then moments later, there's a shooting over that same car.
The state in its brief cited to Detective Jane's testimony when Detective Jane's was questioning Martinez, where Martinez said he'd seen the defendant with a 9mm. Was that admitted for substantive evidence, or was that this impeachment ruling?
No, that was, and I have the citations as well here. If you look at 6RP starting at 1027, they specifically talk about statement of identification, and they go through everything describing the defendant, his clothing, the car, and the gun, and I believe his moniker, too, as Bob or SpongeBob. Those were all statements specifically admitted as substantive evidence, that statement of identification.
So if there is substantive evidence in the record tying the defendant to owning or having used a 9mm, that would affect how relevant the 9mm ammunition is, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's my point. That's just an added factor. Judge Becker asked, well, what if you didn't have that? I think potentially a judge could still rule it's still admissible. But that's, you know, I don't know how you can argue it's not relevant.
Can I ask you a question,
sure,
since time is running out, about the cell phone, the pinging stuff, where the argument is that this really called for expert testimony. And you had an officer who talked about it. The officer could have been qualified as an expert, or I assume an officer could be. It's not rocket science, but perhaps it's the sort of thing that needs to have somebody testify who is testifying as an expert. And one of these cases indicates that if that is the case, I mean, that involves a discovery obligation. You have to say, we're going to call this officer as an expert, and then that gives the defense the opportunity to say, well, I guess we better get an expert, too, if we want to. So, I mean, you seem to be arguing, though, that no, it doesn't really call for expert testimony.
I don't believe it doesn't. I believe you used the word pinging. That wasn't done here, and I think it's very important to not just have broad proclamations like the defense does that says this needed expert testimony. You have to actually look at.
Would you like to know if cell tower was receiving the call for location evidence?
It's in his records. It's in the call records.
You're saying, though, that the closest cell tower is receiving the signal, and isn't that something that's not always true?
That's correct, and the detective testifies that's not always true. But I also think that's just common knowledge.
Which cell tower receives calls requires some level of expertise beyond the ordinary understanding of the general public?
I don't believe so for a couple of reasons. One, all we're doing is talking about radio frequencies, whether that's a kid's walkie-talkie. When they go for farther distance, they lose reception. TV, they're just different radio or frequencies and wavelengths.
We're talking about management of volume and efficiency to economize the number of towers that the company has to pay for.
Sure, and that's why it's simply going to go to the nearest one, and you test by that. It would go to the nearest one if it can. But just like anybody knows that if you, again, use the walkie-talkie example, if you've got a mountain between you, you're not going to get reception. I don't think that's anything that requires expert testimony. We weren't even precisely saying his location. We're simply saying, you know, this is the cell towers that it hit off. That's in the cell phone records. And you can look at all of his phone calls and see which ones they are, which would give you a general idea of where he's at. I don't think that requires expert testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't have anything more to add. I just wanted to make the point that Mr. McCurdy was right with your question, Judge Leach. It's not a crime to possess ammunition in the state of Washington. It's a crime under the federal statutes. So,
what does that add to what we're talking about?
Nothing. It was just point of order. Judge Becker, you make a good point, too. The trial court here premised its ruling on the fact that Martinez would testify that he saw our client with a 9mm, and there's that discussion about whether how broad that statement came in. Was it just for identification, or was it substantive across the board? We would argue it's limited solely to the issue of identification. But absent any more questions about the court, we would just ask that you would reverse Mr. Drayton's conviction and remand for a new trial.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.